So people are generally looking for material benefits. And if we tell them about the Phalashrutis of the various bhakti limbs in Bhagavatam, then that will inspire them to develop faith and practice bhakti. Otherwise, they will go to other places because anyway they are interested in material benefits. Yes, that is true. So the Phalashrutis in the Bhagavatam can definitely be told. And we have the example in the Bhagavatam itself. We have Diti, you know, she wanted a son. And what did Kashyap Muni do? He engaged her in a sacrifice, Payovrata. Humsavana or Payo? Humsavana. And then by that, she wanted someone who would kill Indra. But then at that time, she did the whole ritual and Indra also came. And then the whole process happened. In the process of that, by the end of it, the Maruts were born and she was purified. So by engaging in the process of bhakti, her intention was clearly material. See, that way if we say, very, very rare are the souls who are going to come to us for spiritual purposes. Isn't it? That manushyanam sahasreshu kashchidit siddhi. So, there are very few people are actually endeavoring for spiritual perfection. Most of the people, they are chaturvidha vajante maam. There are four categories of people come to Krishna. In Kali Yuga, four categories of people who come are the distressed, the distressed, the distressed, the distressed. So actually, it is like, mostly it is stress and distress which makes people come to Krishna. So we also talk in our corporate seminars or even college seminars, we talk about how chanting is a means to stress management. And that is perfectly valid. So the problem comes when this is the only thing that we talk about. If this is the starting point to get people to take the process of bhakti, then we should have faith that the process of bhakti can purify people. But if this is all that people hear and based on that people don't follow the process of bhakti, people just and they don't hear the broad philosophy. See, if this is all that we talk about and we don't talk about anything else, then we are doing a disservice. But if this is like a starting point to attract people, to hear about the philosophy, to understand the message, and to start practicing the process. That is fine. You know, that way, Prabhupada used slogan like, stay high forever. Isn't it? That's completely like a drug, as a slogan from the drug context. So that way, so initially, you can apply the principle, yena kena prapalana mana Krishna nivesha. Somehow or other, get people to become attracted to Krishna. But we have to give them a proper understanding eventually. Initially is fine, whatever we use. But eventually, we have to get them towards proper understanding. Proper understanding of philosophy, proper understanding of the process, and then it's up to them whether they want to practice it or they want to give it up. So, the scriptural promises are a part of a whole philosophy and a process. If we isolate the promises from the philosophy and the process, then it becomes a problem. But if you use the promises as an initial spur to get people towards the philosophy and the process, and that is perfectly fine. Does that address your question? Okay, so are you saying that will those promises be fulfilled? Will those things actually turn out to be true? It will vary according to time, place, circumstance. We cannot really say that. So, and if you see that way, somebody says that, you know, if you build a temple for Vishnu, then you will get wealth as much as Brahma or whatever. You know, now are people really attracted by the literal promise? Do they even know how much wealth Brahma has? Are they interested? They just want to be wealthy. So most of the scriptural promises in that sense are not quantifiable in today's terms. In today, the way people analyze things, people measure things, scriptural promises are not quantifiable. So we don't have to really bother about the literal part. So when we tell these promises, we can say yes. So certainly, Krishna is in their heart and Krishna will arrange their life in such a way that he may either fulfill those desires or he may give them some understanding by which they will be able to appreciate what is happening and they will move onwards. Our goal is to connect them to Krishna. If the promises can be initial spur, so whether those promises will literally get fulfilled, we can't say it. It's not that Krishna can't fulfill them, but it's not that Krishna is obligated to fulfill every promise in every situation. See, Krishna is the well-wisher of all living beings. And as the well-wisher, he does what is best for people. So in some cases, the fulfillment of a particular promise through some miraculous intervention, that may be the best for them. In some other cases, that may not be the best. So Krishna will do what is best for them. Okay? Thank you. Yes, please.